Hey, Sandra, welcome to the woods. I'm excited to get started. This is going to be a lot of fun.
This is going to be awesome. I am pumped to have you on the podcast. And well, actually, I'm pumped to have you on the summit. So we are recording an interview for the High Performance Mindset Summit today. So thank you so much, Ian, for being here and for joining us and sharing your wisdom.
Absolutely. And thank you for putting this summit on in the first place. I think this is a time more than any where the importance of sharing tips on mindset, being able to serve one another is really kind of a calling for many of us in this field. And I really feel fortunate to be able to share anything I can to contribute to the greater cause.
Yeah. Thank you, Ian. I was supposed to do a TED Talk on Friday when this goes live. So I'm like, well, I'm going to use my energy to help the world in a different way. So I'm grateful that you're joining us.
Well, we'll make sure this thing far exceeds the expectations of TED. This will be the new TED Summit here.
So to start us off, can you tell us a fun fact about you?
All right. So as an athlete, I played a lot of different roles in a lot of teams. But one thing that I led every basketball team I played in, it was taking offensive fouls. So offensive fouls drawn. But I don't know what that tells you about me, my personality, or my ability to throw my body around on the court. But that is the one thing that held consistent. And so it's even a thing I have to work to kind of check myself when I'm playing noon hoops with our staff. Is it's not important to throw your body in the line anymore.
Well, what I hear is like you get after it. That's what I hear.
Yes, that's for sure.
So, Ian, what is the high performance mindset to you?
When I think about a mindset in general and a high performance mindset, it really has three layers.
Okay.
The first layer of kind of psychological framework. You know, what are those overarching beliefs that we hold related to the way our mind works, related to the way we look at the world? And then what is our ability to process and deal with emotions, our emotional agility?
Okay.
So that second layer, so not only what do we believe about the world and believe about the mind, and so that's where a lot of Carol Dweck's work and mindset comes in, our ability to believe that we can continue to grow and improve as opposed to being static and fixed in our skills. And then that emotional agility is that ability to realize that there are a lot of things that happen that are outside of our control and we are going to react. We have all these neurochemicals and hormones that fire through our body that we're not in control of. We don't choose which one of those fire when. And so instead, we have to be able to roll with the emotions that we experience. And we have to be able to learn how to take those messages and what to do with those. And then the third layer is the mental skills that we develop. So that's our ability to focus, our ability to remain calm and composed under pressure, our ability to set really effective goals and focus on the things that are most important to us.
For sure.
So I think the high performance mindset really encompasses all of those things. It's the framework, it's the emotional agility, and it's the mental skills that allow us to execute. And ultimately, all in service of being able to know that my actions align with my values, align with my mission, right?
Nice.
You know, what am I trying to do in this life? Mm-hmm. What do I really care about? And are the things that I'm doing on a daily basis actually serving those or not? And that, to me, is living a really quality life. And that's how the mindset and the high-performance mindset really sets us up to be able to do that most effectively.
So three things: having a psychological framework, knowing what that is, emotional agility, and then the mental skills. And I think all of these things are so important, particularly right now, that this is, in my opinion, the most important time in our whole life to make sure this is really working for us, not against us. And in your opinion, what role do you think that mindset plays in just dealing with uncertainty and change?
I think it's enormous. I think when we look at what role does strength play in lifting a weight, it plays a lot.
Yeah.
It can be improved by being able to lift the next level of challenging weight. I can't go out there and bench press 300 pounds today. But if I want to, I have a progression to get there. And so when we look at mindset, I think it's really similar. Our ability to then deal with all of the external circumstances that are going on really comes from a foundation of being able to train our mind effectively, having put in the work, and then being able to, in the moment, have that emotional agility or psychological flexibility to deal with whatever's going on around us without getting paralyzed by it.
Yes.
And that's going to be extremely hard right now. So I think about, you know, one of the stories we share a lot, Dartmouth, is related to, you know, the woods. As you can see behind me, our motto is Welcome to the Woods. And our secondary logo is the Lone Pine. And okay. So the Lone Pine is a signal of resiliency. Mm. It's one pine that maintains its upright position through the storm, standing tall. And I think we're all a version of the pine in the sense that we're going to be victim to the onslaught of emotional experiences, of external circumstances, of economic times that are really challenging all of us. And our mind and our mindset in a lot of ways becomes that center point that we come back to. After the storm blows, after it leaves, our ability to stand back up, to stay tall, think being centered and grounded in who we are, what's important to us, and having that emotional ability to come back to, okay, I'm still okay, even if I'm experiencing really difficult times, because yeah. We all will be at various times. Yeah. Or maybe I'm seeing others that are, and I'm not, and I don't quite understand their experience right now. Either way, I can come back to my center, my mindset, what is important to me, and having the skills to be able to do that. And so I think this time, as much as any, is exceptionally critical for us to think about using our mindset as that centering place. Like, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what's important. And this is how I get back to right here, right now.
So I like what you said earlier about, like, does your mission align with your values? And then you said something else. I don't remember the
and your actions.
One. Your yeah. actions. Awesome. Tell us a little bit more about your perspective on that and how that could help us deal with uncertainty and change right now.
Yeah. I think for me, reflecting on my values and what's really important to me has always been kind of a guidepost or a North Star in terms of where do I want to go in this life. Things that I really value are serving others, connecting with people in a community, and chasing excellence, that pursuit of excellence. Those things are really an important place to spend my time. Mm-hmm. And so that guided me into athletics. It kept me in athletics, and it brought me to a community at Dartmouth College, as well as the community that I was a part of with Vision Pursue, because it's about serving others in the pursuit of excellence, becoming the best versions of ourselves. And I think when we can use that to think about what is important for us, now we can think about, now how do my behaviors align with the things that are important for me? Mm-hmm. So if I'm working a 9-to-5 job that doesn't necessarily connect to those things, but it puts money on the table for my family,
right?
My family is a really important value to me as well.
Right.
Then I can say that I value this job greatly because of what it provides me. But outside of that, I still want to make sure to connect to the things that are really important to me. So that ability to have community, if it didn't occur in the workplace, I find it in other places. You know, how do we create our community that we can really connect with people that are on that shared pursuit of excellence? What are the other things that we're pursuing excellence in? Whether that's our craft, whether that's a sport, whether that's a hobby or a habit or something else we're trying to create, yeah. Where can we align those things with what's really important? And that's that next step of now my behaviors are driven by the things that matter to me.
I love that idea of like, and also just so important that we're really working from a place of values. I have my values written on my grit board right over here, Ian, along with like my 1-year goals and my relationship vision and some of my power phrases. But a few of mine are love and warmth. So I really try to show up just like kind to other people, courage and boldness, getting out there, doing these kind of things, and then contribution and service, right? So like, how can I help other people? And I think there's so many ways that people
can
right now.
One of the things that I hear as you're pointing those out too, I look at you and I think the energy and warmth and positivity, like that is naturally Syndra. Why would Syndra ever need to think about that as a value or a goal? But what I love is that you're still making it front and center. Just yeah. because that's what we see showing up every day, that yeah. doesn't mean that it's just your natural state, that you don't have challenges or difficulties and you don't need to be able to kind of reflect and step back and think about what is going to look like to bring that warmth to this conversation. And Yeah. I think that's really important, that even the things that we can easily take for granted, if those are the ones that matter to us, to make them front and center.
Right. That's a really good point. And for me, you know, there are times where it naturally happens to be warm and like show love, but there are times where I want to do that more, right? Like with my two boys, or particularly now at this point where everyone's at home all the time, where we're spending a lot of time with each other. It's like, how can I'm a seventh grader, you know, so that's a hard time too, you know, trying to figure out your own identity and how can I show them some love and warmth. So excellent point. Mission is connected to your vision and your actions. So Ian, when you think about like right now, why is it really important for us to develop like good mindset habits? And in your opinion, like what do you think good mindset habits look like right now?
Yeah, I think about two things. And this is something I've been thinking a lot about when I look at the experience of many of the professional athletes versus the experience of many of the collegiate athletes that I've had the opportunity to work with. Yeah. And right now you're seeing into everyone's home. This is where the work is occurring. And so we see your beautiful bookshelf and I see your book Beyond Grit there behind you. But we, on one of the teams that I work with, we have a combination of there's an athlete who has an amazing home gym and his cardio room next to it. And then there's another athlete who's sleeping on the couch because they have seven people who weren't planning to be home in this one bedroom apartment. And they're in a city it's under house arrest right now, or stay at home order. And right. So that balance is so critical that I think we can look at it almost from two sides.
Okay.
For those of us who feel like we have the emotional or the physical space and energy to come at it from this place of privilege of, I can get better in this time.
Right.
There's one approach.
Yeah.
For those of us who are coming at this from a place of adversity, and this could shift any day. If my wife is all of a sudden really sick and ill tomorrow, I go from a place of privilege to the other things don't matter nearly as much.
Absolutely.
And it's about taking care of ourselves and making sure that she is safe, she is healthy. And so the flip side of that is looking at when we are under adversity, it's more of a time to self-care and protect. Not think about what's the next level that I can get to and how can I continue to strive, which I know is something that you and I naturally do a lot of.
Right.
And I have to check myself in thinking about those who are working with, who has the space for that right now?
When
we look at the stress and demands that are on us, like those can be physical, those can be emotional, those can be relational, those can just be the environmental or the space that we're in. And so the things that produce stress need to be balanced out with equivalent rest, right?
Right.
To get stronger, we have to work hard or train hard, and then we have to rest and recover and allow our muscles to repair and rebuild.
Yeah.
To learn, we have to be able to study, and we have to be able to sleep to gather that information, consolidate it, so we can then use it in the future. And if we're under a deeper state of emotional stress or environmental stress around us, it's going to be really difficult to be able to then continue to grow. And so in that case, it's much more about how can we be self-protective and how can we take care of ourselves and the people in our environment to be able to best support one another, knowing that we're trying to mitigate some losses. This isn't always about gains right now.
Right.
I would say in the day-to-day, I'm all about gains and what can we be doing to pursue peak performance.
Right.
But I think that balance right now is something that I keep coming back to based on where we are, determines the approach we're taking. Is it one of growth? Is it one of protection?
Right.
And if I'm about to go into a boxing ring, and I've never boxed in my life, not a single day, never even trained in a boxing gym of any kind, but I've worked with some pretty elite boxers. And if I train, I can build, if I have the capacity, I can build up to being able to step in a ring with someone of my level. None of the athletes I've worked with I could step in the ring with, but someone who was also a beginner, but I've trained up to that.
Right.
So I can build, that's the building phase. But if I'm thrown into that ring today, mm-hmm. my only job is going to be survival mm-hmm. and protection. And so I'm not going to be thinking about how can I be using this to build my strength. I'm going to be thinking about what can I be doing to take care of myself, to protect the things that are important. So I'm going to cover up, I'm going to hide my face, and I'm going to run. as much as I can and hope that I'm a little bit more fit than the other guy, that he can't chase me for an entire round, or I have a minute to catch away. And I think that's an analogy I'm thinking about right now, and it relates to mindset and the training that we're taking into this, is to be sensitive that these can change. We can be going from one side to another, but to be able to know that based on where we are is going to determine how much work we put in and what that's going to look like in this time.
I really appreciate that perspective, Ian. I've been thinking quite a bit about my privilege, you know, just like my privilege that I have an internet and I can interview like experts like you. I have the privilege of, you know, having enough food in my home and a bed for every person here. And I've been thinking about that a lot, like, you know, the people that are less privileged and what they're experiencing right now. And I appreciate what you said about these two different ways we should think about it, you know, like this protection or growth. And some people are in the protection phase. So I think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Their needs are not being met in terms of safety and security and food and shelter. And then, you know, the ones that can be self-actualized have all those other needs met. So I think really what you're saying is like, if you're in the protection mode, stay in the protection mode, you know, like meet your basic needs. And it's okay at this time if you're not growing or starting a new project or, you know, is that kind of what you're saying? Tell me a bit more about your thoughts
very
on
much
that.
So. And the one thing I would add to that too is, regardless of which camp you're in, mm-hmm. rather than thinking sometimes self-actualization, I actually feel like the term should be much mm-hmm. more other actualization, because we realize like the top hierarchy is actually our ability to get outside of ourselves, to connect to something greater than us and to serve others is one of the most, in a sense, self giving thing, or I don't want to use the word selfish in a say, because it's not selfish, but we're the ones who feel the best, right?
Right.
And every time you and I have an opportunity to work with someone who we know we made a difference in their lives,
yes,
I think I'm the one who's getting the gift here.
Yeah,
you know, they may be performing better or doing better in something, but the way I feel and seeing what they've experienced is great, and that's why community service is such a powerful thing. And many of us in this time who are coming at it from a place of a little more privilege have that ability to think about how are we giving and serving others. But honestly, that's something that even at the base level, the little things that we can be doing, anyone can be doing to help to serve or give to one another, are incredibly powerful.
Right.
And the stories from some of the greatest war times, or from homeless people who've given to others, and the giving that you're seeing from people in extreme duress, it actually puts gives me a little feeling of shame every now and then too, because I think, wow, they gave of what they didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I have, shouldn't I be giving even more?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that, regardless of where we are, that ability to connect and serve others, I think, is one of the greatest gifts we can give to ourselves and to anyone in our community. And my wife is my model in this, because yesterday she went through and made a list of people that we could be giving stuff to. And she cooked dog treats, and we delivered them to all of our neighbors that have dogs. And
wonderful
gifts online. And it was something that we ended the day feeling amazing.
Yeah.
And so I almost kind of take this step back of, wow, like, what can we be doing to contribute greater to the common good in these times?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way that, whether you are struggling and feeling like you're in that survival mode or protective mode, the little tiny things that you can do that are acts of service to one another, to acts of caring, that as we walk by someone on the street, normally we can just smile. We're not walking on most streets right now. You can't give that gift of just a smile as you go by them. So what are the little things you can do, whether that's a sign in the window for when cars drive by? And my niece has been really excited about the little teddy bears in the window thing. And I'm new to this, and I've learned about it from a 3-year-old. So I think I've missed a few things along the way.
Yeah.
But little things that people are doing to help others through this time and to create some hope and joy in this, I think are really critical that we can all be doing to not only self-actualize, but really other actualize or community actualize.
So really good point that you can serve others in the protection mode or if you're in the growth mode right now. And I just think about the best way for me to get out of my head and feel sorry for myself is to give to others or turn my attention to others. So I appreciate that point. So when you're thinking about, Ian, like a mindset tool that you could use, what do you think would be a top mindset tool you would recommend maybe for the athletes at Dartmouth or just people in general that you think could really help during this time?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think this goes across both camps, whether you're surviving or thriving right now. With Vision Pursue, a mental training company, we teach a three-step process.
Okay.
It begins with aligning expectations. It moves into being able to process emotions effectively. Okay. And then finally being able to focus our energy on what we have control of. And so the first phase of that, expect the expected, okay, is about realizing that, you know, we may have a tendency to expect that, okay, this will pass really soon. Everything's going to be okay. And we want to be really kind of positive and optimistic about this. Or we can get stuck in reading all of the news and thinking this is going to be really depressing. And all of a sudden we start going six rows down the expectation line. And even the most advanced epidemiological experts are having trouble figuring out all of those things. So I know when I'm talking to people in my community, like none of us had the expertise to be able to do that. So rather than guessing all these things, or rather than just expecting it to be okay, how can I align my expectations with what's going on and what we can anticipate in that one step down the road? So I can anticipate that this will be difficult for some people, that I'm going to get pretty stir crazy at my house, that it's going to, my productivity may not be what it normally is because I have more distractions. I'm surprised my dog hasn't come in and knocked on the door yet. He wants to go out and wants to play. And so just realizing that there's going to be more things pulling us away, mm-hmm, that the financial crisis is something that's going to impact a lot of us,
right,
and being sensitive to that. So that to me is realizing that the expectations aligned with what's actually going on. And so I can just set that from the beginning.
Okay.
Just let my mind know that these are things that are happening right now. It may be something I'm struggling with, but this is what's happening right now. So I'm going to just kind of face the facts, kind of get down to the realism of it, realistic. But then I can actually, rather than run away from it, you know, I think it's Susan David's TED Talk where she talks about emotional agility.
Yeah, super.
And she talks about the cake in the freezer. If you have the chocolate cake in the freezer and you're trying to resist that and you keep looking at it and you put it there and you're just wasting a whole lot of willpower thinking, I can't have this and I'm going to put it right here. And the fact that we're trying to tell ourselves, oh, don't think about those things. Don't
right.
think about the financial struggles. Don't think about when this is going to be over, let's just not worry about that. The more we push those things away, the more they keep coming back. And our subconscious will do a great job of reminding us of all of the things we're repressing. And so aligning those expectations and then being able to realize that we're going to have an emotional roller coaster. And so how do we deal with that?
Yeah.
And so for dealing with our emotions, I think about like first being able to separate from them. Realizing what my emotion is. It's a neurochemical release that creates hormones and through my body that I'm experiencing in this moment. I am not frustrated or depressed in this. I'm experiencing frustration or depression.
Yeah, good.
And that we know that that's going to pass. That each neurochemical release transfers through our body, lasts about 90 seconds. And then if we revisit it or we rethink about the thing that triggered it, it can then multiply and it can build up and that we could easily be angry for hours or days, but really allowing it to just separate, let that thing pass. But the way to best do that isn't just to say, oh, go away emotion.
Right.
But to really open up to it,
mm-hmm,
to fully open up to whatever you're experiencing in the moment. It's normal and natural. Human beings are meant to emote. And our mind gives us an emotional response. And so now it's about listening to that message. So if that message is, I'm pretty down right now. And now I think, well, what are the things that lead me to be down right now? Well, we're separated from a lot of the people that I really love and care about. Like, that's pretty tough. I'm thinking about how others are doing in this world and those challenges they're facing. That's pretty tough. Of course, I should feel those things.
Right.
Should I feel happy that people in this world are struggling? Should I feel happy I don't see the people I care about? Absolutely not.
Right.
So we can't judge the messenger in this. Instead, now we can think about opening up to it, realizing, of course, I should be experiencing this, but it's temporary. Then I can evaluate what my next steps should be. Is it important for me to, at that time, okay, I'm going to go do a workout because that helps me get this nice emotional reset, or I'm going to go take a walk and separate from this, my environment, for a moment, or do I move on to, is there something productive I can do about a situation? And so that's where I think about that third phase of controlling the controllable.
Yes.
What do we actually have control over in this moment? What can I do? And sometimes it means I don't need to do anything. I can just give myself permission to feel this.
Right.
And then sometimes it could be, I'm choosing to do something right now. I'm choosing to go for a walk or to go for a workout, or I'm choosing to go and make dog cookies for the neighbors and bring them by. Like, that's now something we have control over and a choice that we have that opportunity to make. And so for me, the three-step process of expecting the expected,
okay,
see, separate, embrace, and evaluate our emotional experience. And evaluate is not judging it. Evaluate is being able to determine what those next steps could be.
Okay.
And then being able to focus on controlling the controllables in that environment is really one of the most powerful mindset tools that's made an impact in my life and the lives of so many of the athletes and corporate clients that Vision Pursue has worked with over the years.
Align your expectations, process and separate, evaluate those emotions, and then control what you can. I most appreciated what you just said is like, frustration or anger right now is something I'm experiencing. It's not who I am. And I think that separation is really important, and to allow yourself to feel all those emotions because it's normal and natural. And, you know, I think for me, the first couple of weeks, I was like, I'm great. I'm strong. I'm bold, you know? And then it kind of hit me the last couple. It's like, whoo, you know, this, we don't know how long this is going to last. So, giving myself some permission to feel all those emotions as well. So Ian, I'm thinking about how you define the high performance mindset, right? The psychological framework, dealing with the emotions and having emotional agility, which you just talked about. And then but having the mental skills, right? So when you think about how you defined it, what gets in the way of people developing this high-performance mindset? What do you think?
I think it can be a lot of things, Sandra. I think
life
and time becomes the primary excuse for most of us. And in a lot of ways, it's really true. In a lot of ways, it also comes down to priority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, developing the mental skills isn't easy. You know, when I think about, at the end of my day, what do I want to put my energy into? Sometimes it's okay, now I'm excited about getting a good workout in, about cooking, or I'm just tired, want to just kind of lay, relax, maybe watch a TV show or movie, something along those lines. And so if it's that thing that we push off, it becomes difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see the tangible results. If I work out, I see my fitness improving, or I can see physical changes. If I cook dinner, I see the dinner that's in front of me, and I feel accomplished. I don't know about you, Sidra, but I've been doing a lot more cooking now that I'm in my house all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel accomplished when all of a sudden there's something in front of me that's cooked. And then I clean up and I feel accomplished because now the kitchen is clean after cooking. And so you have something really tangible. The mind isn't tangible.
Hmm.
And it's hard to know, is this working?
Yeah.
You know, one of the mental skills that I think helps us practice that whole three-step process is meditation.
Yes.
And when I think about meditating, I remember the first times I tried to meditate and I just thought I was bad at it. I'm no good at this. I keep falling asleep. I couldn't sit cross-legged because my legs were too tight. So I would lay down on my back and I was told that this was okay. And then I would fall asleep. And I think, wow, I'm really a bad meditator. You know? And because I didn't know how to evaluate, was it good or was it not? And I sat there and had this, well, I'm going to do 20 minutes a day, twice a day. And when I kind of took a step back and I've learned a lot more about the process, I was able to start really small. And to start small and start simple and realize that noticing that my mind is actually wandering and bringing it back is a win in itself. It doesn't mean we're bad at meditating. If we fall asleep, the message is that you're probably overtired, or the only way your body knows how to relax is to sleep. And so naturally, when you start relaxing, it goes to sleep. They're not bad things at all. They don't tell us that we're good or bad at something. And I think a lot of that is being able to realize that so many of the mental skills, they're happening here. We don't know if they're working or not. And so unless we're talking with an expert and saying, Sindra, is this what's supposed to be happening? How do I know if I'm getting better at this?
Yes.
It becomes just up to our own judgment.
Right.
And so to me, then the prioritizing of it, when we realize the overarching impact it can have in our lives, and then the trusting in the process. And so that means knowing what the process is and what it's going to look like becomes really important. So knowing that this isn't easy and it's going to take some time. And so if I take that skill of meditation and I think about this is going to be 30 seconds today, it's going to be a minute tomorrow. Let me stick with a minute for a few days until I feel good about that. Then let me try 2 minutes, or let me try 5 minutes. And then I reflect on how that experience was in a non-judgmental way.
Yes.
I just look at it as information. Now all of a sudden I can start to kind of have this guide of this is what it can look like over time, as opposed to, well, I'm just going to do this. I get excited about it. I buy the gym membership and then I go to the gym 3 times. I don't show up like most people end up doing. It's easy to just get excited and jump into something that we think sounds great. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we actually trust in the process or have a really clear process of what that's going to look like or plan for the obstacles. So at the beginning of the Vision Pursue app that we use to kind of facilitate a lot of the mental skills training that I still do on a daily basis, we do a lot of Vision Pursue clients, we talk about observing the obstacles that get in the way.
Okay.
And then making a plan for them.
Yeah.
So if it's time, then what can I cut out that maybe 5 to 10 minutes that I could integrate this instead? And where can I do that at a time that could be consistent? For me, it's over my coffee in the morning. You know, that's a time where it's actually really nice to have my breakfast and I can scroll through emails on my phone while I'm having my breakfast. And then I finish my coffee while doing either a meditation or while reading something. While kind of reading through daily practices, while thinking about how I'm going to apply some of these mental skills throughout the course of my day.
Yes.
And it becomes this kind of separating, like, okay, now I've done this, now I can jump into my day. But the part of introducing my email before then, I've actually found makes it even more challenging, which I kind of like at this point, because my mind wants to go back to work. It doesn't want to sit here and wait 5 minutes before I start my workday, Sindra. It's going and going and going. And so realizing like that is what it's all about. It's about that practice, because if I'm quiet and calm and nothing is challenging me and I'm able to sit comfortably, that's not real life. That's not my everyday. My everyday is going like this. And right. So when my mind's going like that, that's actually when I've learned to discipline it the most. And when it's the most helpful for me, caffeine speeds it up. So I have to be able to balance that out and realize that that's normal. And now I really get to see what's happening under the hood. And when we know what's happening under the hood, then we can think about tinkering with it.
Yeah. Ian, I appreciated that you just said like mental skills need to be developed. It's not easy, right? And we're really working with like the mind that's not very tangible. And I appreciate just how you just described how you also work to develop your mindset. Is there any other additional tools as we wrap up? I have a few other questions for you, but is there any other additional tools you would suggest, or you know, anything else that you have in terms of strategies that people could use during this time?
You know, one thing I've been thinking a lot about during this time is self-compassion.
Yeah.
A third of us judge the emotions we experience already before a pandemic. And before, you know, we're getting, I think in addition to this pandemic, we're having a bit of an infodemic where you're getting information thrown at you from all sides.
Yes,
and I think in this experience, it's so important to be able to realize that all of that is normal and natural, and our emotional experience that occurs as a result of it, it's normal and natural, and there will be things that are easy and there will be things that are more difficult. But rather than judging ourselves or being our harshest critic, which I think many of us typically are, we can look at kind of some of the science of success, and we find that, you know, even more than self-confidence, self-compassion is actually aligned with success in so many areas. And this is a critical time to be able to practice that. So when we notice that we're getting hard on ourselves because we're not being as productive as we would like to be, or we didn't do the workout that we wanted to today, even though we were used to going to the gym and having this routine, and now we're stuck in our house trying to adapt and it just doesn't feel the same. And so now, oh man, I didn't do my workout and I didn't accomplish this. Just being able to take a step back and realize that these are not normal times. Yeah. And it's okay. That doesn't mean that I go ahead and say, I'm never going to work out again. That's okay.
Yeah.
It means I didn't work out today, and that's okay. So yeah. How can I make a better plan for tomorrow? How can I make a little tweak? How can I just get started? And how can I look back and think about, like, what are the little wins that I'm experiencing? You know, those little wins, I think, can really help to shift us from getting stuck in this beating ourselves up into, okay, well, I was able to, you know, call two of my family members today and check in on them, let them know that I care. You know, that's a little win, even if I wasn't as productive as I wanted to in my workday. But that ability to meet our experience and let ourselves know that it's okay to be going through this, it's so important for us to do that with other people. We have the ability to practice that every single day with ourselves, and we're not in the room with a lot of other people right now, aside from our families, which sometimes be the people that it's hardest to be compassionate with the most. We can often be the shortest with those people. And so our ability to practice that with ourselves, I think, can be something that I hope to come out of this with, a skill that I've actually really strengthened through this time, is my ability to practice compassion and first practicing that toward myself.
Yeah. Self-compassion is more critical even than self-confidence. And we know just, you know, from you and I, our work and the research on confidence and how important that is to well-being and performance. And to say, you know, that it's maybe more important, that I hope that people are listening to that and work to practice it more often. I know I can.
Yeah.
So,
that's for sure.
Yeah. Last question I have for you, Ian, can you tell us a story of maybe a person or a team or a business that demonstrates the power of mindset?
Yeah, I think there are so many amazing stories of teams and individuals in normal times, but
yeah.
One of the things that struck me the most, our head men's lacrosse coach, Dartmouth, Brendan Callahan, on the day that the Ivy League announced that they're canceling the spring sports season, he's someone who's really invested in mindset and mental training and really for himself, for his team. And thinking about the sport of lacrosse, I don't know how familiar all the audience with, it's a high energy, pretty crazy environment. You know, I've never met a lacrosse team that I thought lacked energy or noise from the sideline or noise from the stands. Lacrosse parents get into it.
For sure.
And so seeing a leader in that environment, being able to step into his team and let them know how this is not about us right now. This sucks. No one is gonna say this is great. And to give a little context, the Ivy League was the first conference to announce the discontinuation of their spring seasons. So when the presidents of the Ivy League made that decision, it was really on the front end of all of this. It was that night the NBA announced their closure.
Wow.
And their suspension of the season. So it was before the NBA. It was before any of the other conference had canceled either spring sports or the men's basketball conference tournaments. And so it really came on this front end. So they got this really raw emotional experience. It felt like the thing that they've trained for so long was ripped from them. And all these seniors, I'm so heartbroken for the seniors who this was their last chance on the field with this team, unless there's some unforeseen things, or we're able to kind of get some opportunities for them to play again. In many cases, at many schools, that's not going to be the case. And so this is their last shot and it's pulled from them. And knowing the emotional experience that is going on in that locker room, hearing him and seeing him walk in there and talking about this being for the greater good, that this is more important than you or I or sport. This is about our families. This is about our grandparents. This is about our communities. This is about all of the vulnerable people in our world. And I feel proud that we're on the front end of this and that we're doing our part. And I hope that we can continue to do our part in everything moving forward after this. Seeing that composure and that poise and this perspective that he brought to a group of 18 to 22-year-olds, and then seeing their response as a result of that. You know, knowing, I think, imagining a sideline of lacrosse players, imagining their response in that moment, I see their responses to calls on the field.
Right.
So I can only imagine this level of how it's going to react. And right. Seeing how they responded as a result of the leader in front of them and how he responded to this. Awesome. And the poise and respect that they brought to the process. And it wasn't easy, and nor should it be. Mm-hmm. But they're able to sit with that dis-ease or mm-hmm. unease in that situation and still be able to move forward with a broader perspective on the entire situation. I thought was a really powerful experience and something that we can really kind of look at the role that leaders play when it comes to mindset and the impact of the people around them right now.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that it's like they followed the energy of the leader when he came in more poised and just like that we need to sacrifice for the greater good, that then impacted how everybody else acted or how they thought or how they were processing the situation. Ian, you brought it today. I want to share with you like the most important things that I got from our conversation. Mission should align with your values and your actions. So that was super tangible. I think people can really think about what that means for them. I appreciate when you're talking about an emotional agility, that like our emotions that we're experiencing right now are not something that reflects our identity or who we are, but more about like just what we're experiencing right now. And the importance of this idea of like protection versus growth. I think that's powerful, and to realize that people are experiencing the situation in a variety of different ways. So to meet them where they're at, but also to be compassionate with ourselves if we're in protection or if we're in growth. And then at the end, just about one third of us judge our emotions, and to continue to practice self-compassion, because that might be as important as just being confident in yourself. So Ian, grateful for you to join us on the summit today. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Sindra. And to everyone watching the summit, my thoughts and prayers are with you and your families for health and happiness, both through this experience and the resiliency to come back stronger, the resiliency to know where you are in terms of thriving or surviving and be able to be compassionate with that. So thank you, Sindra. Take care, everyone.
A great message.